AHDB podcast. Subscribe now so you don't miss future episodes.
Hello everyone and welcome to the AHDB Beef and Lamb podcast. I'm Chloe McKee and today I'm sat with Beth and John from the University of Liverpool. With silage season fast approaching, we'll be discussing the latest AHDB funded research on parasite survival in silage with a focus on liver fluke. Thank you for joining us today, Bethan. Can you tell us a little about yourself?
Hi, Chloe. Thanks for the introduction and the chance to take part in this Beef and Lamb podcast. So I'm a PhD student funded by the BBSRC, the University of Liverpool and AHDB. And I work within the Veterinary Parasitology Research Group at Liverpool, which is led by Professor Jane Hodgkinson and Professor Diana Williams.
Thanks, Bethan. And as part of your PhD, you've been looking at the survival of liver fluke in silage. Could you briefly explain what liver fluke is and why it's an issue for farmers?
So liver fluke is a parasite which affects the health and welfare of grazing livestock, in particular cattle and sheep. And in the UK, fluke infection does have a significant economic cost to our agriculture industry. And this is for many reasons, but certainly includes the cost of production losses, stock deaths, and also the loss of carcass value. We've also seen cases of fluke infection increase in recent years, and drug resistance is a major issue in many parts of the country.
So reportedly there is some resistance to triclobendazole in the UK, and we know it's the only product effective against fluke of 2 days and older in sheep. So it's so important that other control measures such as pasture management are used. And we hear a lot about the risk of liver fluke to grazing animals, but fluke doesn't really seem to be talked about in silage. So how big is the risk and why is it an important consideration for silage making this year?
Yeah, so the risk to grazing livestock is always highlighted because the only known route of infection is when animals ingest infected fluke cysts. And these cysts are shed onto pasture from a small mud snail, which acts as an intermediate host in the fluke life cycle. And the survival of these cysts during ensiling and the risk of infection from silage was largely unknown before this work was carried out. But I think that building up a bigger picture of liver fluke transmission on farm is really important. And hopefully this work will help farmers to make informed decisions about parasite control around silaging time.
And speaking of silaging time, this can vary from farm to farm, and particularly this year with many farmers being affected by the wet weather, it could be later for some. So what management practices could we introduce before silaging starts, which could reduce pasture contamination from liver fluke?
Yeah, so I think it's important to avoid cutting forage from areas which may favour the presence of the mud snail. And typical snail habitats can include damp areas with poor drainage and areas with poached or softer ground, maybe, for example, around a leaking pipe or a tap. And we know that if snails do become infected, they can each shed hundreds of fluke cysts. So taking time to identify these areas, potentially fence them off, and avoid harvesting grass from them would reduce the likelihood of contaminating your crop.
So how does liver fluke become ensiled, and at what stage of the life cycle is there the greatest risk at silaging time?
In theory, any stage of the liver fluke life cycle, which is free living on pasture, including fluke eggs, could become ensiled. However, the stage which we are most concerned about is the infective cysts. So normally there is a peak in the number of these cysts on pasture from late summer into autumn, but low numbers are likely to be present on pasture all year round, as they can survive for many months given the right conditions.
And so we know that liver fluke can become ensiled, but can it survive once it's ensiled? And if so, how?
So our findings have shown that fluke cysts in silages, which have followed a strict anaerobic fermentation, were killed by 2 weeks storage, meaning that if these silages were fed out to livestock, there would be no risk of infection. In comparison, fluke cysts which were in silages, which were spoiled, were able to survive for up to 10 weeks.
So is the key message that if you make your silage properly, there is no risk, is that correct? And could you define what good fermentation means?
Yeah, exactly. So the important finding from our study was that no fluke cysts which were recovered from the sealed silages were alive. So a good anaerobic fermentation is one which has a short aerobic phase and is dominated by lactic acid. I would also say that reaching a pH of 4.5 is really important. Otherwise, you are at risk of secondary fermentation happening.
And you mentioned that fluke cysts survived in spoiled silages for up to 10 weeks. What does spoiled mean? So was that just based on visual signs of mould or were other measurements involved?
In the context of our experiment, spoiled silages were those which were sealed with perforated plastic, meaning that there was oxygen ingress right from the beginning of storage. In practice, this may happen if, say, bale wrap is pierced when bales are moved between sites, or if a defective oxygen barrier is used to cover up a clamp. Alongside visual indicators such as mould growth, I also measured silages dry matter content and pH in-house, and the silages were also externally analysed for their lactic, acetic and butyric acid content, which provided insight into the quality of the fermentation we achieved.
And if we had to feed this spoiled silage, could we presume that it would be safe to feed after, say, 12 weeks from a liver fluke perspective?
So in our experiments, 10 weeks was the last sampling point. So any time after that, the risk would be unknown, as we have no data to support if the cysts would be alive or dead. But having worked with fluke cysts for the majority of my studies, I can say that they are much more resilient than I could ever have imagined. But I do think that rerunning the silage experiment for a longer duration would definitely help answer this.
Thanks, Bethan. I appreciate you can't cover everything in one study. And were there any links with long wilting times or the dry matter content at cutting or harvesting?
Yeah, so previous work in this area didn't really focus on grass dry matter content at cutting or harvest. But because this is such an important factor in silage making, I was keen to investigate it. So I made silages from cut grass, which was wilted to either 20, 30 or 40% dry matter content. And we found that regardless of grass DM, fluke cysts were killed in sealed silages by 2 weeks. And in the spoiled silages, we found that the cysts survived longer when the grass dry matter was lower.
And does the risk level change depending on the number of cuts of silage taken?
So our experiments involved seeding the fluke cysts onto the grass ourselves rather than resampling naturally contaminated lays. So I would not be able to say if the risk of fluke varies between the cuts. However, I'm confident that as long as an anaerobic fermentation is established within a mass of cut forage, the contaminating cysts should be killed by 2 weeks.
It's reassuring to know that through good fermentation, we can prevent this risk to our stock. And so were there any trends between grass-only lays versus grass and clover?
So the grass which we used in the experiments was harvested from a university farm, and our lays contained a mix of perennial ryegrass and white clover. But it would be interesting to repeat the experiments using only grass and see if there were any differences in our results.
And speaking of the experiment, please could you give us a quick overview of how you carried out the study? Does it include both baled and clamp silage?
Yeah, so our study involved seeding the fluke cysts onto cut grass, which was stored for up to 10 weeks using laboratory-based ensiling methods. And I made silages which were anaerobically sealed, and also silages which were not sealed correctly to simulate aerobic spoilage. So at different time points, the silos were opened and the cysts were recovered to see if they were still alive and able to develop into immature fluke.
And for anybody listening who thinks their grass crop will be contaminated, what methods are there to reduce the contamination in the silage?
So I'd say for those concerned about contamination, my advice would be to rapidly wilt the cut grass to achieve the advised dry matter content. So this would be between 25 and 30% for clamped silage and 35 to 40% for baled silages. And doing this would help to achieve an optimal fermentation. And the key point in reducing liver fluke risk from silage is to ensure that the grass is properly consolidated and sealed so that anaerobic fermentation can begin.
And if for various reasons we don't achieve optimal fermentation and consolidation, could using an additive help to reduce the risk?
So treating grass contaminated with fluke cysts with acidic preservatives has produced inconclusive results in the past. So in my experiments, I didn't use any additives or inoculants and just allowed a natural fermentation to occur. And we found that the fluke cysts were still killed in the sealed silages, even though the pH of these silages was above recommended values. But this is still an interesting finding and raises questions over how crucial acidity really is to kill the fluke cysts, and maybe the lack of oxygen is more of an important factor.
For anybody listening whose animals are housed, what symptoms would we see in these animals if they were eating silage which has been contaminated?
So acute infection is usually seen in sheep and is caused by large numbers of juvenile fluke migrating through the liver. And this causes widespread damage and, in severe cases, sudden death. But with chronic infection, we tend to see clinical signs like weight loss and anemia. And I'd say for those who are concerned about fluke in their house stock, I would recommend looking at the recently updated COWS and SCOPS website. They have a lot of information on sustainable parasite control.
Thanks, Bethan. That's really helpful. And then what would your top tip be for silage making this season?
From a fluke control perspective, my top tip would be to ensure the cut forage is consolidated and sealed well to achieve an anaerobic fermentation. This is probably the simplest solution to reduce the risk of liver fluke transmission from silage, as oxygen availability appears to be an important factor for the cysts to survive.
And finally, I understand this research is a major part of your PhD. What are the overall aims of the project and what are you working on at the moment?
Yeah, so the broad aim of my PhD is to better understand fluke transmission on farm. I've also been doing some lab work to understand how long the fluke cysts can survive under different conditions, and also field work where we collect the mud snails from farms to see if they are infected with fluke. And at the moment, I'm writing from home and hoping to submit my thesis in the autumn.
Oh, fantastic. Well, good luck for your future studies. And it's been a really interesting discussion today. Thank you. And as this project progresses, we will provide updates on our website and in our printed and e-newsletters. So thanks for talking to us today, Bethan, and wish you well with the rest of your studies.
Thanks very much, Chloe.